Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 81. I'm recording it on Saturday, January 24th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Why Stocks Let You Down and How to Make Sure It Never Happens Again. I sent an email to the fellow who runs the Frugal Dad blog a week or two ago, and I proposed an arrangement where I would he writes about all sorts of personal finance issues, but primarily saving and other related issues and money management, all that sort of thing. He does not often write about investing. And I want to get the investing ideas that we've developed in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities out to a larger audience. And so I proposed sort of a partnership with him, and where we would work together, and he would sort of explore these questions with me and then write up some of these ideas for his audience. And that way we would sort of spread the ideas to, because he has a larger audience than I do today. And then as he wrote it up, because he has a popular blog, other blogs might pick up the ideas, and these ideas would spread all over the internet, which I would obviously like to see happen. I think it's very important. Well, it's important for me to build up my website, and it's important for the entire community that people get to benefit from our work, and it's important for the entire U.S. economy that we start to get some straight talk out about what's happened in the stock market in the past year. Now, the guy who runs the blog did not respond to the email, so I presume that partnership's not going ahead, at least not now, but I still have hopes that might happen someday in the future. But regardless of whether it happens with him or not, I would like it to happen with someone, so I'll be contacting some other people. And when I wrote the email, the thought occurred to me it would be helpful to have a podcast that summed everything up. You know, I pointed him to the podcast. I think it's a great way to learn about this, about our findings, because it's a nice conversational medium, informal, not intimidating. I really like the podcast, but, you know, the one problem with them is they are long. Each of them goes an hour. Most of them go an hour long. And there are 80 of them. This is 81. So to listen to 80 hours of material is asking a lot of someone. So I thought it would be good to have one podcast that summed up the message. And it's also just good for newcomers to the site to have a podcast that gives an overview. And then you can decide if you want to listen to particular topics explored in more depth. So that's the purpose of podcast number 81, is to give an overview. And you know, the title tries to address the question that I think is on the minds of most middle-class investors. You know, what happened to stocks? You know, how come? I thought stocks were going to be great. I thought I was going to get rich. What happened here? I thought this was safe for the long run. What's the story? You know, why did stocks let you down? And the practical question, what do you need to do to make sure it never happens again? That's what people need to know. And what we really need to be doing, what everyone in this field should be doing today, is trying to restore investor confidence. That's what's been damaged. The analogy I use is, a spouse who cheats on her husband, or a spouse who cheats on his wife, and trust is broken, and trust needs to be restored. And what we're hearing, We have to restore this trust. If we don't, the consequences could be truly horrible to contemplate. There are serious people talking about the possibility of our economy going into a depression. And we know from the historical data that there have been four times when stock prices have gone to insanely dangerous levels. And this is the fourth. And on the first three occasions, we saw price drops much deeper than what we've seen in the past year. If you go by what happened on the three earlier occasions, we should be expecting another 50% price drop in years to come. It might be several years out, but we should be expecting another huge price drop. Now, that is totally optional. There's no economic reason. The earlier price crash was economically required, but there is no economic requirement for a further price drop today. So the stakes are high. If we get the word out and explain why this happened, I believe we can restore confidence in the stock market. If we restore confidence in the stock market, we can get the economy back on the right track. I think that's the secret. That's why people are scared to spend. People are scared to spend because housing prices have dropped, the housing bubble, and because stock prices have dropped as a result of the stock bubble. And so people are looking at, all of us are trying to save for retirement, and we look at our accounts, and we've lost 50% of our life savings, and we're scared to death to buy a new car or to go on a vacation. That's the problem. So we need to restore confidence in the market, in the system, really, not just the stock market. We need to restore confidence in our whole economic system. There's a feeling that our leaders have let us down. There's a feeling in among many that the capitalist system has let us down, and I don't think that's such an unfair comment. I am not anti-capitalist. I generally favor it, but I think a good case can be made that in this case, capitalism let us down, because what capitalism is all about is the reason why capitalism works, or at least is supposed to work, is the feedback mechanism that when companies produce good products, the market rewards them. Well, in the case of investing, it hasn't worked that way. Investing experts, and I use that word in quotes, investing experts developed some poor ideas over the past 30 years. Not intentionally, but the ideas don't work. The ideas don't stand up to scrutiny. And yet they've been rewarded with great popularity. So the system isn't working. And there are all sorts of reasons why it hasn't worked. But the bottom line is, this capitalist system hasn't worked in this particular area. And it's no small thing, because a lot of people have lost money they need to retire on. It's not a joke. So we need to do something to restore confidence. And I think the way we do that is we go back and we say, what did we get wrong? And then we fix it. And it's not going to restore confidence in a day or a week or a month, but it will turn things around. It will change the human spirit. Instead of being down, instead of feeling every time we turn around the news is going to be bad and things are going to be worse, once we've identified the problem and taken steps to fix it, that changes. The energy changes. The energy that's now negative becomes positive. So the purpose of this podcast is to lay out an answer to the question, why stocks let you down and what you need to do to make sure it never happens again. It might be better to say what we need to do to be sure it never happens again, because one of the points I'll be making is stock investing is not a lone wolf activity. It's something we do as a community, and we need to start thinking about it in that way much more than we have in the past. I'm going to start with safe withdrawal rates, because that's how I started. I'm no investing expert. I didn't go to school to study investing. I don't manage a multi-million-dollar fund. I'm some guy who posts on the internet. I used to post about saving at The Motley Fool, website. I was a very popular poster. I built a discussion board there, the Retire Early Board, that I think can fairly be described at that time as the most popular board at that site. And then we ran into some troubles with abusive posting. And a big part of the problem was a study that one of the community members there had done on safe withdrawal rates. And safe withdrawal rates are the studies we use to plan our retirements. And these studies purport to tell us how much we can take out of our retirement portfolio every year and have confidence that our retirement plan will survive 30 years. So the way they're done is they look at a worst case scenario, the worst case we've seen in history, and they say, if you would have survived that, we're going to assume you're safe. I looked at these studies as part of my effort to put together my own retirement plan back in the 1990s, and I discovered an analytical error in the studies we all use to plan our retirements. The analytical error is painfully obvious. You know, some people ask me, you know, do you really think you could find an error that all these big name investing experts didn't find? And the answer is, well, I wouldn't have thought so, but that's the way the ball bounced. The error is painfully obvious. The error that the studies make is that they do not make an adjustment for the valuation level that applies on the day the retirement begins. There is no one safe withdrawal rate. What these studies claim is that the safe withdrawal rate, as if there is one. They say the safe withdrawal rate is 4%. That would mean that if you had $1 million portfolio, you could take out $40,000 a year for 30 years and be virtually certain that that retirement plan would not go bust. And the $40,000 is inflation adjusted. The reality is that the safe withdrawal rate varies. There are some valuation levels at which the number is indeed 4%. There are other valuation levels at which the number is 2%. There are other valuation levels at which the number is 9%. It varies. It depends on how stocks are priced on the day you retire. And it's not hard to understand. Many people have a hard time understanding it. I think that's just because of the popularity of passive investing. People have a hard time thinking this way. But if you can get out of that mode and just think about how everything else in life works, it all makes perfect sense. Think about buying a car. You know, you do some research, you look at consumer reports, you determine that the car is worth basically $20,000. That's a fair price. You know, if you want a particular color and the dealer tells you you're going to have to pay $21,000, you might say, hey, I'll do it. I don't want the hassle of looking all over town to find another dealer, or I don't want to wait till the color I like comes in. So if you pay $21,000, it's not a big deal if you have it. But you're not going to pay $60,000. That's nuts. And that's what happened with stocks. In January of 2000, the way we measure, the best way to measure stock valuations is a tool called PE10. It's the price of the S&P index over the average of the last 10 years of earnings. The fair value PE10 level is 14. The P10 level that applied in January of 2000 was 44. That's three times 14. That means that if you had $100,000 invested in stocks in January of 2000, the real value of your portfolio was not $100,000. It was something in the neighborhood of $35,000. They were telling you had $100,000. They were telling you a number three times the real value. And if you had $10,000, of course, you really had something like $3,500. If you had $1 million, you really had something like $350,000. Everyone was walking around thinking they had three times what they really had. Surprise, surprise, that 8 years later, we're deep into the worst economic recession in decades. How did that happen? Part of the job of the market is to set prices properly. That's what a market does. That's the point of a market. There's two people that want to trade something, and the market has to set a proper price. The trouble with the stock market is it doesn't set the proper price instantly. Prices are set by people, by humans. And humans are not computers with legs. Humans have emotions. And there are times when our emotions run away with us and we do things that are highly irrational. And that's what happened in the 1990s. We bid stock prices up to insanely dangerous levels. Every year, you were reading in the newspapers, stocks went up 20% this year, stocks went up 30% this year. All these crazy numbers. And nobody was asking, where does the money come from? Where the money comes from when stock prices go up by those crazy levels is it comes from the returns of future investors. The average return on stocks in the U.S. has been 6.5% real for a long, long time. So if you earn 6.5% real plus inflation, 6.5% plus inflation, well, that's fine and dandy. That's real. There's no problem with that. And that's a plenty good return, of course. But if you're earning 20% or 30%, you should know there's something fishy going on. And the something fishy is that we are collectively borrowing from our future. And we borrowed so much that it took a 50% price crash for us to get back to fair value. We now are back at fair value. That's the good news. And we should all be celebrating. I wish we were celebrating. I understand people are suffering. But they're suffering because of what they were told during the passive investing era. That's why they're suffering. Not because the market has done its job and set prices properly. That's a good thing. If the market didn't set prices properly, the market would collapse. If the market collapses, we're all in deep trouble. So it's a good thing. The price crash was a good thing. Some people don't want me to say that. But reality is a good thing. Fantasy is a bad thing. Fantasy is dangerous in stock investing. Reality is our friend. When prices were where, you know, I have a calculator at my website, the Stock Return Predictor. I encourage you to check it out. And that calculator uses the historical stock return data to tell you what the most likely 10-year return on stocks will be in the event that stocks perform in the future somewhat as they have always performed in the past. It's like a weather report. It looks at the conditions that apply at a given time and says, here's what's likely to happen. And we can't predict exactly. I can't tell you exactly what your return's going to be. But I can say there's a 20% chance it'll be higher than this. There's a 50% chance it'll be higher than this. There's an 80% chance it'll be higher than this. I can give you the range of possibilities, and I can assign rough odds to each point on the spectrum of possibilities. January of 2000, prices had gotten so high that the most likely 10-year return was a negative number. So everybody who was putting money into stocks was investing in an asset class that was likely to cause them to have less money at the end of 10 years than they had starting out. You've heard about compounding returns. Well, it works in reverse when you invest in an asset class providing negative returns. You could have put your money into a money market fund and had a better chance of ending up ahead at the end of 10 years than putting it into the S&P 500. And of course, there were better options available than money market funds. Treasury inflation protected securities were paying 4% real per year at that time. They were paying a full 5% real better than stocks every year for 10 years. Your retirement account would be in a lot better shape if you had put your money in tips than if you put them in stocks. But 90% of the people who are called investing experts were telling us to put most of our money in stocks. That's why stocks let you down. Why were they telling us that? Are they bad people? Do they wake up in the morning thinking, how can we screw the middle class investor? No. That's moronic. They're not bad people. They're smart people. Most of them. Maybe not all of them, but the ones that I've come into contact or contact with are smart as the Dickens, and they're good people. You know, I'm sure they have their flaws like everyone else. But I've talked to a number of these people. I haven't talked to all that many, but half a dozen. The ones I've talked to have been generous, spirited, smart, good people who just happen to believe in passive investing, which is probably the most dangerous approach to investing ever concocted by the human mind. I am prone to bold statements only because I've learned from experience that stating these things gingerly and tentatively doesn't get through people's radar. A lot of people don't want to hear it. A lot of people want to hear the fantasy stuff. They want to hear, oh, it's okay. Stocks really are always best for the long run. Timing really is impossible. Buy and hold really does work. All of those ideas are marketing slogans. All of those phrases are marketing slogans. They all have truth in them. There is important truth in the buy and hold concept. There's important truth in the timing doesn't work concept. There's important truth in stocks for the long run. But they're dangerous concepts because there are important falsehoods in all of them too. So you need to be very wary. I'll trace the history of how it came to be that all these smart, good people believed in this dangerous idea that I call passive investing. Passive investing means you don't change your stock allocation, no matter how insanely dangerous prices get. Now, before I do that, though, I started talking about safe withdrawal rates, and I allowed myself to get pulled away from it. So I want to wrap that up a little bit. The safe withdrawal rate changes, and these are the numbers we use to plan our retirement. So I happened to discover this, and I posted about it on a discussion board at Motley Fool. And there was a reaction, and the same reactions applied everywhere I've gone in the 7 years since. Most people were excited to learn, many of them for the first time in their lives, the realities of stock investing. It shouldn't be Rob Bennett teaching people the realities of stock investing for the first time in their lives. That is flat out crazy. Because as I say, I'm no investing expert. I'm a journalist. You know, I look things up. I know how to look things up. I know how to interview people, things like that. I have the skills of a journalist. I can write a little bit. And there are people out there today who can tell you the realities of stock investing. I frequently name them on the podcast. Robert Shiller, John Walter Russell, Ed Easterling, Andrew Smithers, Rob Arnott, Cliff Asness, John Malden. These people understand the realities of stock investing. And you can search on the internet and find this stuff. But the realities are totally at odds with the dominant investing model of today, which is passive investing. Passive investing is the model that says you don't have to change your stock allocation, no matter how insanely dangerous prices get. That's the whole problem. You know, the answer to the question posed in the title of this podcast, Why Stocks Let You Down? Stocks let you down because passive investing became popular and you bought into it. You know, and what do you need to do to make sure it never happens again? You need to abandon passive investing and become what I call a rational investor, which is the opposite model. The rational investing model says you must change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. You must, if you want to have a realistic hope of becoming an effective long-term investor. And long-term, I believe, is the way to go. So, what happened with the safe withdrawal rate? These studies are all over the internet. They're quoted in newspapers all the time. Anytime you look at an article saying, here's how to put together your retirement plan, the odds are good that they are basing that advice on these safe withdrawal rate studies. And all of these studies are wrong. All the old school studies. Old school, I now distinguish old school, which are all the studies that were in existence when I started talking about this, from new school. New school are studies that take valuations into account. And the primary new school research is at John Walter Russell's website. John is my partner in development of the calculators at the website. John's website is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. John is the lead new school researcher. But there are others who have done new school research. Ed Easterling had an analytically valid safe withdrawal rate study. Bill Bernstein had an analytically valid analysis, not a study, but an analytically valid analysis in his book, The Four Pillars of Investing. So there are other people who have done analytically valid research, but John and I have the only analytically valid retirement calculator that I'm aware of on the internet. And we call that the retirement risk evaluator. But what this does is it tells you the accurate safe withdrawal rate. It just tells you what the number is at different valuation levels. Today, last time I checked, it was somewhere around 5%. You know, you can go to this website and look it up. Plug in today's PE10 level, 14, and see what the safe withdrawal rate is today. But I believe for an 80% stock portfolio, which is what they usually use in most of the studies, somewhere, it might be a little less than 5%, somewhere in that neighborhood, higher than 4%. So that's the safe withdrawal rate concept. Now, you would think it would have ended there. You know, I put up a post explaining that you need to consider valuations and that you can't calculate the safe withdrawal rate accurately and without doing so. And that's where I ran into John. That's where I met John at Motley Fool. And then he followed up with some research showing that, you know, what I was saying was in fact true, you know, using data, because I don't have the skills to do the data analysis. So John did that work. Well, we ran into a little trouble. The trouble we ran into was abusive posting. The author of one of the old school studies didn't want to acknowledge getting the numbers wrong. And so, you know, he had supporters and he started posting abusively and eventually destroyed that board. Now, that in itself is sort of shocking, but perhaps not too shocking to people who have been around the internet. The internet's known as a sort of rough and tumble place. And some will just say, well, that's not good, but it happens. Well, the story gets more complicated because it wasn't just one guy who was posting abusively. It was he had a gang of supporters. And you have to ask yourself, why would there be a gang of supporters for a guy who got a number wrong in a retirement study that these people use to plan their retirements? That's odd. What you would think is, intuitively, you would think, if he got the number wrong, and if they planned their retirements according to his numbers, they're going to be steamed at this guy. But they were not. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say they were steamed at him. I've heard some people acknowledge. I've heard some people say that he's wrong. There are quite a few. There are a lot who have criticized him for his abusive posting. There are a smaller number who have said that he's wrong with the numbers. But I can't think of anyone offhand who has expressed, you know, anger at him for the trouble they caused, for the trouble he caused them by getting the numbers wrong. I can't think of one case where that's happened. So right off the bat, we had a strange reaction. Well, it was strange that the author wouldn't want to fix his study. The author, I'm not saying his name, but I probably should. It's John Graney. And, you know, I don't say it to make him feel bad. I think of John as a friend. He doesn't think of me as a friend, but I think of him as a friend. And we were friends in the days before I, you know, pointed out the error in his study. And John's website, if you want to check out his study, and it is worth checking out, it's a good piece of work. And I have applauded it on many occasions. I wish that he would fix it, but, you know, the error was not intentional. And the study advanced our understanding, you know. So it served a good purpose in its day. And his study is at retireearlyhomepage.com with no spaces. retireearlyhomepage.com. And you can see the study there. He's got a version you can buy for $5, but he's got a basic version that you can see for free. And it tells you the most important information is in the basic version. And he has a number of articles about safe withdrawal rates. It's well worth checking out. So, it was strange. Look at all the layers of strangeness. It was strange that John didn't want to correct the study. That in itself is sort of weird. But, you know, possible. I mean, you can imagine it happening. That someone just wouldn't, you know, would be embarrassed or whatever and would not want to correct their study, but it's unusual. But then another layer of strangeness is he has all these people not only defending him, but posting abusively on his behalf, and they are people who were harmed by his errors. But the strangeness doesn't stop there. We had extensive discussions of this, and I wasn't so sure of my position in the early months. You know, we had to study this, and as we studied it, I became more and more confident because all the evidence went one way. There has never been any evidence that valuations don't affect the result. Never. And he makes no adjustment for valuations at all. He's not the only one. It's not just John. There's studies. I think one thing that John always brings up in his defense properly is that the methodology he uses, he just took from studies that were done, you know, by other academic researchers, and the these studies received what's called peer review. So these studies were examined by other academics, and they signed off on them. So John didn't pull this methodology, you know, out of his head. It's a methodology that's been approved by people who should know what they're doing. And he's not the only one with such a study. They're common. But John didn't want to fix the study. He had lots of supporters. There were lots of people interested in learning. Lots of people. Hundreds of community members interested in learning. But there were also hundreds that were abusive. And ultimately the board was destroyed. And ultimately Motley Fool banned me from the Motley Fool discussion site. And I was once, I think, the most popular poster at the site. The co-founder of the site, Tom Gardner, wrote one of the blurbs on the back of my book on passion saving. I built the board that was the most popular board at the site. And they let him destroy it. And I wrote to Motley Fool and I said, please do something. They're destroying this board, and they wouldn't do anything. So that's another layer of strangeness. But it gets worse and worse and worse. So, you know, we then went on and we started other boards in other places. And then these goon posters went to these other boards and destroyed them. And, you know, there was one guy, ES. You know, he was a guy, and he started a whole site. He was mad at Motley Fool because they were going to charge for discussion boards, and he says, I'm going to start my own site. And he did, and we persuaded him to start a retire early board there, and it took off, and it built his board, and he was successful. He had his own site, and he let these abusive posters come in and destroy it. And I shook my head. Why would someone do this? It's just, you can't believe it's happening. I've lived through this nightmare, you know, 10 times now. Anyway, it goes on and on, but we went to the, you know, Vanguard Diehards. It was a huge site at the Morningstar.com site. Same story. I reported accurately about safe withdrawal rates. Some people loved it. You can read, you know, at the website. Go to the website, and you'll read comments. Hundreds of people thought it was the greatest discussions they ever had, but there was an abusive group that would not tolerate discussion on these questions. So you have to ask yourself. First, you know, the retirement issue, I think, is closed. We've shown that these studies are wrong. There are going to be millions of people who are going to suffer busted retirements. In all likelihood, we don't know for sure. But the retirements that were put together, according to these studies, in January of 2000, have only a 30% chance of survival, according to an analytically valid study. So the odds of their survival are not good. So that in itself is a big deal, but the much bigger deal is the question of why weren't the studies corrected? And they still have not been corrected. I'm speaking to you now in January of 2009, I don't know of one of the old school studies that has been corrected. This is inconceivable in any other field of human endeavor. If there were a car that came out where, you know, when it got into a little accident, it blew up and killed people, we would take it off the market. If there was a trampoline that came out that when kids jumped on it, you know, they received serious injuries, they would take it off the market. But retirement studies that can be shown to be analytically invalid, nobody does anything. And I've tried. I've put out press releases. I've tried contacting the media. I've gone to discussion boards. I've gone to experts, you know, to get their help. I've gone to blogs. That you cannot, if there's a way to get these studies corrected, I haven't figured out what it is. I'd be grateful if anyone has any thoughts. So it's a problem. But the problem isn't just that millions of people are going to suffer busted retirements. That's a big enough problem in itself. The much bigger problem is the process question. Why is there reluctance to reporting the realities? I am portrayed as the bad guy in many of these discussions. I've been banned from numerous discussion boards, banned from Motley Fool, banned from Morningstar, banned from Early Retirement Forum. I was a popular poster at every one of these places. I had, you know, people singing my praises at every one of these places. Never once have I put forward an abusive post. My worst critics acknowledge that. Never once have I had a post removed by a site administrator on grounds that it was abusive. Never once. But I've been banned. They never give a reason. The closest I get to a reason is they will say your posting is disruptive. Now, you know, there's a grain of truth in that there's no question that the discussions have been disrupted, but they're not disrupted by me. They're not disrupted by me reporting accurately the safe withdrawal rate. They're disrupted by the abusive posters who can't tolerate someone reporting the realities. So, what you need to understand, what we all need to understand to move forward, is there is a great reluctance today to hear accurate, honest discussion of the realities of stock investing. That's an incredible statement, but I am persuaded that it is a 100% true statement. And the implications are as far-reaching as could be. So, how did that come to be? Is the next question. Important clues. There were two hugely important clues provided by Scott Burns. I mentioned that I contacted experts for help. And many, I have found many experts, a good number of experts, many maybe is too strong, but probably a dozen, who agree that I've actually never found anyone who disagrees that valuations affect long-term returns, but I've got many very strong statements that valuations affect long-term returns. And this is the whole question under dispute. If valuations affect long-term returns, all of the investing advice of the past 30 years is wrong. The investing advice of the past 30 years is you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices get to insanely dangerous levels. Just stick with that same old stock allocation. That's called passive investing. But if prices affect long-term returns, the value proposition of stocks obviously changes when the price changes, because obviously if you're going to get a lower return, the value proposition of stocks is not as strong. So if the value proposition changes, you obviously don't want to be at the same stock allocation. There's always a balance of risk and reward when you're setting your stock allocation. You're saying, well, you know, stocks are risky, so I don't want to go too high, but stocks offer great return, so I don't want to go too low. So maybe I'll go 60% stocks. Maybe you decide 60% stocks. But if the price changes so that stocks are three times more risky and offer a much less in the way of return, you're obviously not going to stay at 60% stocks, are you? Maybe you go to 30%. But passive investing says no. Passive investing is a totally counterintuitive investing strategy. It's the opposite of what common sense tells you to do. Common sense says to consider price, just as you do with everything else you buy. Cars and houses and comic books and bananas, you always look at the price. But passive investing says, no, don't do that with stocks. Just stick at the same stock allocation. Don't worry about price. The question on the table is, does that make any sense? And the answer that's come back loud and clear to my ears is no, it makes zero sense. There's not a sliver of evidence or argument saying that that's a good idea. And, you know, the thing that most alarmed me as a journalist, you know, I'm a reporter by background. Scott Burns, you know, outstanding personal finance columnist at the Dallas Morning News. Scott wrote three columns about John Walter Russell's research, the New School research on safe withdrawal rates. But there were all sorts of funny things about how he did it. He didn't write. He always did it sort of at the bottom of the column in answer to a question from a reader instead of making it the headline. And he never personally endorsed the New School. He'd say, there are people talking, you know, instead of saying, this is the way it should be done, he never took a personal stance on it. And it's not hard to know whether it's the right thing or not. All you need to know is, do valuations affect long-term returns or not? He never provided a link to our calculator. It's like he was going out of his way to downplay the significance of what we've done while somehow getting it on the record that he knew about it. And Scott made just an incredible statement in the first of the three columns. This was back in, I think, July of 2005 is my recollection. He had a statement in this column explaining why we have not read about the flaws of the old school studies in the media. He said, quote, "It is information most people don't want to hear. It is information most people don't want to hear." As a journalist, that sent chills down my spine. Because what he's saying is, what we hear in the newspapers, on websites, on television, is not the realities of stock investing. What we hear is what we want to hear. Not the truth. If that's so, and I think it is to a large extent so, if that's so, we've got big problems. And of course, we're witnessing the consequences of these problems today in our diminished portfolio accounts, our diminished retirement accounts. It is information most people don't want to hear. Now, why would that be? Well, if you look at the historical data, how stocks have always performed in the past, what you will see is that there's a dramatic difference in how stocks perform depending on price. Stocks always perform well when they are priced low or moderately. There are no exceptions to the historical record. They always provide a strong long-term value proposition. When stocks are priced insanely high, as they were from 1995 through the first part of 2008, stocks always deliver bone-crushing losses to those invested in them. Again, no exceptions in the historical record. There have been four times in history when we've tested this idea of, you know, maybe it'd be a good idea not to change our stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. The first time, we saw bone-crushing losses as a result. The second time, we saw bone-crushing losses as a result. The third time, we saw bone-crushing losses as a result. The fourth time, we saw bone-crushing losses as a result. I'm beginning to detect a pattern. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I don't have an IQ of 140, but I'm beginning to detect a pattern. Maybe we shouldn't invest heavily in stocks when they're priced at insanely dangerous levels. Do you think? That's what I'm coming to believe. I call that idea, that controversial idea, rational investing. It's using our minds and doing what makes sense. It's in contrast to emotional investing, which goes by the name today of passive investing. Now, it's not hard to understand why people would want to stick with the same stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. The reason is most of us are not stock analysts. Most of us don't study the historical data. Most of us get our information on how to invest from our friends and our neighbors and our coworkers and the media. We don't read books. We don't study it. It's a side thing. And most of us are intimidated by investing. Most of us don't. Investing involves a lot of numbers. Most of us are not good with numbers. That includes me, to be sure. And so most of us are a little nervous and about investing. And so we put our faith in experts. And what happens is, most of us are naturally nervous. We're anxious about stocks. We tend to be conservative. We're risk averse. There's literature on this. The behavioral finance literature, they say most people are excessively risk averse. So we're not inclined to take chances. As a general rule, the idea of investing in overpriced stocks is not a problem because we don't like the idea. But there are times when circumstances conspire to cause prices to go high. And what happens is, when prices go high, I mentioned, you know, earlier on, the average return is 6.5% real. Well, when prices go, when you have something called a bull market, they don't call it a bull market unless the return is higher than 6.5% real. That's what makes it a bull market. You don't have stability. Stability would be a 6.5% real return. But when you have these shocking returns, they call it a bull market. And that's what we had in the 90s. Not nice steady returns of 6.5% real, which are realistic and good and healthy. But returns of 20%, 30%, crazy numbers. Where do the crazy returns come from? We're borrowing from the future. That's all. We just borrow money from the future, and we have to pay it back, or the market would collapse. And when it comes time to pay it back, people discover to their great dismay that they don't have half of the money they thought they had. And so, of course, they pull back on spending. They stop buying houses and cars and vacations. And that causes a huge contraction in the economy. And the problem we're dealing with today is the bull market of the 90s wasn't any ordinary bull market. It was off the charts, nutso, berserko. It was the worst bull market ever suffered in the United States by far. People talk about the Great Depression, where we had an 89% drop in stock prices. In 1929, the P10 level was double fair value. It was at 33. Fair value is 14-15. It was 33. January 2000, it was 44. We were into totally uncharted waters. But here's the analogy I use. I say, just as we can't help it that we have this get-rich-quick impulse within us. All of us have it. We see other people making all this money when prices are going up artificially, and we want a piece of it ourselves, naturally. People are getting money for nothing. You want to be left out? It's 100% natural. It's just human nature. But human nature causes us trouble in many areas of life. You know, most of us have issues with eating too much or not exercising enough. You know, gaining weight as we age. Well, imagine. The one thing we have going for us in our battle against, you know, eating too much chocolate cake is if you eat 4 pieces of chocolate cake every day, when you turn on the television, the experts are going to be telling you, you know, try not to eat so much chocolate cake. Try not to eat so many bags of potato chips. Try not to drink so many cans of soda. Try to get a little exercise. At least you know that you should be trying to do better. With stocks, we have this get-rich-quick impulse that says, hey, I'm not going to lower my stock allocation. I sort of like it that I could get rich quick with this. We need experts to be telling us, no, 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 that's a mistake. You're going to lose your retirement money. Pull back. Apply the brake to the car. This is dangerous. Instead, what we have is experts telling us, oh, that's okay. There's no need to lower your stock allocation. We've got academic studies that tell us it's fine. Passive investing will work. Don't look at the historical data. Don't consider the fact it's never worked before. It's going to be different this time. I'm sure of it. I'm really, really sure of it. The experts are all telling us the opposite of what they should be telling us. They should be telling us responsible advice to lower our stock allocations when prices get out of control. Instead, they are telling us irresponsible advice. Now, why are they doing that? Is it a grand conspiracy? I don't think so. If it were a grand conspiracy, you could expose the people running the conspiracy and solve the problem. The problem is the problem is that the problem is within us. The experts are pretty much just reflecting what we want to hear. As Scott Burns indicated, they're telling us what we want to hear, not what we need to hear. So the conspiracy is us. If we tell the experts, if we signal to the experts that we want better information about how stock investing works, we'll get it. Now, I think the thing that got everything off track is something called the efficient market theory. And the efficient market theory was developed in the 1960s, and it led to the passive investing model. And the experts are following the passive investing model. That's why we hear this advice. The development of the efficient market theory and the passive investing model is potentially a very positive step, because what it really involved was the rationalization of investing. Before that, people just had different opinions. We didn't really have academic research. Rationalizing the investing process is a very good thing, because it's very frustrating reading all these different opinions and you don't know what to do. Legitimate research is a good thing. And I'm confident that the studies that have been done, the vast majority, were legitimate in the sense that the people doing them were trying to help. They were trying to do good things. The problem is that this is a new thing. We don't know it all yet. The way I say it in a lot of the podcast is our understanding of how investing works is primitive today. None of us are really experts. I say that I'm not, but I don't think any of these other people are true experts. The state of knowledge is just not sufficiently advanced. So what happened is the efficient market theory is essentially the first cut at coming up with a quote-unquote scientific way to invest. And when these ideas came out, they were very exciting. Eugene Famas is usually credited as the person who developed the efficient market theory, and he discovered something very exciting, that short-term timing does not work. Short-term timing is when you change your stock allocation, it could be because of valuations, with the expectation that you're going to see a benefit for doing so in 6 months or a year or 2 years, 3 years maybe. The research that was done pursuant to the efficient market theory showed that short-term timing does not work. Now, some people dispute that. I personally am persuaded that that is so, that short-term timing does not work. The grand mistake that was made is that experts got very excited about this, and they jumped to a hasty conclusion that showing that short-term timing doesn't work is showing that all forms of timing don't work. The way they just say it is timing doesn't work. But the same data that shows that short-term timing does not work also shows that long-term timing has always worked. The same data. If you believe in passive investing, the reason you believe it, more likely than not, is because of the studies that have been done supporting it. Well, the studies that people are talking about when they say that the studies support passive investing are studies showing that short-term timing doesn't work. But that same data shows that long-term timing does work. So if you believe in passive investing, you should believe in long-term timing. But if you believe in long-term timing, you don't believe in passive investing. It's all crazy. What appears to have happened, and I've studied this in some depth, I don't know everything, so please, if you have a better theory, let me know. What appears to me to have happened is that people jumped on the conclusion in the 1960s, 1970s, that all forms of timing do not work, not just short term. And it became accepted wisdom that timing doesn't work. Even though that's totally counterintuitive, you would think that you would need to change your stock allocation when prices got out of control. But people thought the data said otherwise, and people thought it was important to make investing scientific, and so people repeated this idea. Then all sorts of other things kicked in. Then what happened is in the early 1970s, Burton Malkiel wrote his book, Random Walk Down Wall Street, arguing that timing doesn't work. The thing to do is to be a passive investor. It had lots of good ideas in it, like he told people not to focus on the short-term noise. And that's a breakthrough insight. And so the book had great influence. But it was wrong about long-term timing. It was wrong about passive investing. But these ideas, they were all sort of sold as a package, and they caught on. Then John Bogle founded Vanguard, and he created index funds. Index funds were a wonderful way for middle-class investors to invest, because they no longer had to worry about picking stocks. So this became hugely popular. And it was a low-cost way of achieving high diversification. It was wonderful. But Bogle, too, bought into the idea of passive investing, and he sold it as a package. He didn't say, I have one good idea, index, which truly is a wonderful idea, I believe, and I have another good idea, invest passively, don't change your allocation. No, he mixed these ideas. They're all sort of smunched together. So most people today who advocate indexing advocate passive indexing. They advocate buying an index and then staying at the same allocation, regardless of price. I advocate valuation-informed indexing. Yes, index, but no, do not stay at the same allocation when prices change dramatically. So Bogle helped things along. Then a lot of Wall Street, you know, a lot of the mutual fund companies got into the act. They wanted to sell these ideas, and they went to their marketing departments. And they came up with marketing slogans like timing doesn't work and stocks for the long run and, you know, buy and hold, stay the course, buy on the dips, all this sort of thing. And these ideas became, they caught on. They caught on among middle class investors for all kinds of reasons. This was a simple approach to invest, an effective approach to invest. It makes sense. It sounds prudent. It, you know, it sounds like it's not a get-rich-quick scheme because you're not trying to achieve the highest returns. You're settling for the market average. So it sounds prudent, and middle-class investors like that. And then, the icing on the cake, after these ideas were all gelling, we had this huge bull market, which in the eyes of millions of people, quote-unquote, proved it. Now it wasn't a theory. It was truth. Passive investing works. That's what people concluded. The reality is that passive investing is the most dangerous investing approach that could be imagined by the human mind. Why is that so? Because stocks are a wonderful asset class. There's only one thing wrong with stocks, and that is that stocks entice you into ignoring price. Stocks have great emotional appeal because stocks go up not only because of the economic realities. Stocks can go up just because lots of people get excited about them. That's really all it takes. And that's dangerous. That's playing with fire. And, you know, I compare it to riding a car down a highway. You know, riding a car down a highway is an inherently dangerous act. We all do it every day, but there's clearly danger to it, so you need to be cautious. So most of us have learned to follow certain rules of the road, you know. One of the rules of the road is when there's 3 inches of snow on the ground, you don't drive the same speed as you would on a sunny day. So if you would drive 70, you know, on a highway where 65 is the speed limit, when there's 3 inches of snow on the ground, you lower your speed to 10 miles per hour, 15 miles per hour. What passive investing teaches us is when you get to the price levels that applied from 1995 through the first 1,000 of 2008, you are driving on a highway with 3 inches of snow on the ground. There have been 3 times before the 90s when we got to those price levels. The average price drop on those 3 occasions is 68%. Now we're going through the 4th time. And of course, we're seeing something similar. And it's not necessarily over yet. The experts should have been telling us these are dangerous conditions. And instead, we had ordinary people saying, you know, and I've met these people on discussion boards. These ordinary people would be saying, wait a minute, this road seems slippery. I don't like the feel of this. I'm going to slow down. 70's not right. And the experts were saying, no, keep it 70. Don't slow down. You won't be able to retire. If you slow down, you're finished. Keep your foot on the accelerator, man. And naturally, we're having carnage on the roads today. the experts are human like all the rest of us. You know, they're experts. We call them experts because they've studied a lot of books and they've managed big funds. There are things they know intellectually that we don't know, and that's all well and good. But the emotional side of stock investing has barely been touched in the literature until recent years. They're not expert in the emotional side of investing. Very few. Robert Shiller is an expert on the emotional side of investing, but very few of the big name experts today are expert on the emotional side. Now, the good news, I don't want to leave this on a gloom and doom note, because the last thing we need is more gloom and doom. The good news is there's been new research, every bit as scientific as the earlier research, proving the case for passive investing. The new research has been done by people like Shiller and many others, showing that returns, that valuations do affect long-term returns, that the market is not instantly efficient, that passive investing cannot work, that you must time the market, not short-term, but long-term. You must engage in long-term timing. There's a wealth of research now available. It's not as sizable as the research on you know, supporting passive investing, but it's quite substantial. And this research is rarely commented on. It's commented on. I mean, you can find it if you do Google searches, but it's not mainstream. They don't talk about it on the cover of Money magazine very often. And this research, 1981 forward, I think provides the answer to the question why stocks let you down and what to do so that it never happens again. And one of the things we need to do, I'll leave it on this, is we need to learn to stop thinking of investing as a solo act, a lone wolf act. Investing is a community act. We process information not by reading books generally. We process information by what we hear from our friends and our coworkers and people on television and people on websites and all this sort of thing. The only way each of us can invest effectively for the long term is for all the rest of us to know how to invest effectively for the long term. You see, the people who were posting abusively and who destroyed so many retire early boards and indexing boards, they knew that they were wrong to destroy these boards. That I'm totally confident of. But they believe the investing ideas they're following. I'm also confident of that. They personally believe these ideas. They are in a horrible situation. They're sure that these ideas are right, and they've got their lives staked on them. They've got the retirement money sailing, you know, riding on them. But when they are questioned as to why they don't change their stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels, they have no idea how to respond. None. They've bought into passive investing for totally emotional reasons. They have no intellectual arguments to offer. And so when someone comes on a discussion board and insists that these ideas be defended, they respond with anger. This is a problem. Passive investing cannot be defended in civil and rational debate. It was a good idea once upon a time. It was actually a breakthrough idea once upon a time. It's been discredited by the investing research of the past 30 years. The experts know that there are problems. This is clear. They know. But they don't know it all. It's not really that they're holding back on this in a way, and in a way they're not. They know enough to have doubts, but they're afraid to explore those doubts. This was summed up in another comment by Scott Burns when, you know, he was talking about the work that I've done with John Walter Russell, and he said, Rob, he said, you've added a layer of understanding to the safe withdrawal rate issue. That's obviously a good thing. So Scott was complimenting me. That was kind. But then he said, but Rob, your approach is catastrophically unproductive. That's Scott's phrase. Catastrophically unproductive. What he meant was, by my approach, is I don't just sort of casually mention that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong. There's a guy who Larry Swedro, he's a published author in the field. He's a financial advisor, and he posted at the Bogleheads.org board, and Larry Swedro has said recently that the old school studies are a case of garbage in, garbage out. That's as strong as any statement I've made. But when Larry does it, he makes the statement, and then, you know, he talks about it. That's the last he says of it. He doesn't try to get the studies corrected. He doesn't say, he doesn't create a calculator giving accurate numbers. He doesn't, you know, try to get an article published in the newspaper warning people who followed the old school studies. And they can live with that because it doesn't cause them emotional pain. He's letting them continue to live in their fantasy world. And I don't think that's right. I think of these other people as my friends, my fellow community members. They're, of course, free to invest as they please. I don't have any objection if they don't follow my ideas. But I do see it as my responsibility to try to point out the errors when I discover them and to explore those errors in follow-up threads. And that causes people great emotional distress. That's a reality. And I say that's a problem. I say that you can't invest effectively for the long term unless you have confidence. And if you feel emotional distress whenever your ideas are questioned, you obviously don't possess confidence. Perhaps you possess bravado. It's not the same thing. To invest effectively for the long term, you need confidence. To have confidence, your investing ideas need to be in accord with common sense. The idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation in response to dramatic price changes defies common sense. I believe that the experts are suffering from cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is a well-recognized phenomenon in the psychological literature. It means that the human mind doesn't like to entertain two conflicting ideas at the same time. Passive investing and common sense are in direct conflict. People didn't realize this once upon a time, but as time has gone on, the evidence has become stronger and stronger that this is so. And the experts are forced to choose common sense or the dominant investing model of today. And most have chosen passive investing. And they sprinkle in common sense observations all the time, but they don't explore them. They're essentially keeping themselves dumb. And many millions of investors are doing the same. And what we need to do is not ignore the problem. We need to highlight the problem. We need to resolve the conflict, not engage in cognitive dissonance and continue to fool ourselves. We need to resolve the problem. We need to have a national debate on what works in investing and on this literature of the past 30 years that shows that valuations really do affect long-term returns and that long-term timing really does work. Because when we do that, we can very quickly move to a new model of understanding how stock investing works that is in accord with common sense. It will include many of the ideas that we've developed that become popular during the passive investing era. The idea of, you know, keeping costs low, the idea of indexing and thereby obtaining high diversification at low cost, the idea of tuning out the short-term noise, the idea of sticking with your strategy through thick and thin, all of these ideas are pure gold. To develop these ideas into a workable investment strategy, we need to understand that passive investing, the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation in response to dramatic price changes, does not make sense. That's the poison. That's why I believe stocks have let you down. And that's what I think you need to change so that they won't let you down again in the future. And you need to change it not only for yourself. You need to change it, if you can, to the extent you can, among your friends and your coworkers and your neighbors and your fellow community members. Because it's only when other people are talking about stock investing in sensible, sane, realistic ways that you will gain true confidence in what you're doing. So we need to change the entire discussion. We need to get the experts to acknowledge that they've made some mistakes, or at the very least, they don't know everything, that they're not sure. Because once they say they're not sure, all this dogmatism that has caused the taboo on discussing the realities for 30 years now goes away. Once that taboo goes away, I think we're going to see a change in the attitude of middle-class investors toward the stock market. It's not going to change overnight. But what we will see is a change in direction. Instead of things getting darker and darker over time, things will become brighter and brighter over time. If you have questions, please, or comments, please contact me at the Contact Rob button at the left-hand side of every page at the website. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.